There's news coming out of Adelaide, Writers Festival, that a number of well-known Palestinian writers have been targeted by a Zionist campaign, saying that they shouldn't be on the program because they're anti-Semitic, and in fact, it would seem as if purely because they're Palestinian. And despite the organizers retaining them on the program, there still seems to be pressure. Can you talk to us a little bit about what now appears to be almost like a Zionist cult that's infiltrating the choices that are being made in cultural areas in Australia?
Look, the efforts to silence and censor Palestinians have, have always been there since the resistance. And even looking at documents that I've accessed from activists here from the 60s and 70s and 80s, there is nothing new about what's happening here. What is, I guess, new is the desperation and panic mode that Zionists are in now, to shut down absolutely any criticism of Israel. And the reason that is happening on this kind of level and escalation of hysteria is because there is social media showing us, live what is happening. There is no way you can deny what is happening. The most prestigious human rights organizations in the world are coming out concluding that Israel is practicing crimes against humanity, apartheid. So the crimes of Israel are there and nobody can deny them. And so the attempts to stifle and censor Palestinians have really reached new levels with the way that definitions, very disingenuous definitions of anti-Semitism now are being used and weaponized against people in academia, in the media. And what we are seeing really is the desperation as Palestinians continue to speak and their allies to censor. And the way that that is done, the only means available to is to use the weapon, the slur, the smear, the threat of anti-Semitism. And what's so dangerous is how stretched that definition has become, and the way that the media have lapped that up, and politicians, and not critically engaged with what speech is actually being threatened and silenced here. Because it's if you look very closely, even at the casual way, the casual language in which allegations of Semitism have been leveled, you can really see, that things like, for example, one of the Palestinian writers, Muhammad Al-Kurd, in reports about this whole controversy, has been described as an anti-Semitic, as a critic of Zionism, as hostile to Israel. Since when is hostility towards a state, let alone an apartheid state, anti-Semitism or racism? So what's actually, being criticized here is, the language of people who are resisting violence. And again, there's nothing new there, but what's infuriating for Palestinians is the way that this is just done in a very casual and uncritical way and accepted by the establishment.
Yeah, because there's been an absolute increase in the murder and the taking of land over the last month in Palestine. You'd say that in a funny kind of way, this is like trying to divert attention away, like you say, from that murder and land theft. And the breaking of international law, the casualness—it's quite interesting because, in actual fact, the Palestinians are Semitic. So to be called anti-Semitic is quite a bizarre charge, isn't it?
Well, I know people often sort of use that, but I think that the trap with that is that we start to fall into sort of literal definitions and semantics, and it kind of it kind of detracts from, I mean, when we talk about anti-Semitism, it's a kind of word where there's no actual correct definition that I can say you're not using this definition instead of that, or you're not being intellectually sort of or historically accurate. The point is that it's meaning has been collapsed to allow so many things to fall under it. And the main sort of weapon that it's used as is to shut down any criticism of Israel, and that's the issue for Palestinians.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because it is just by me bringing that up means I've diverted attention from what's the real problem. I mean, I remember being interested in the way the Israeli state has assumed or taken over, tries to shape the history of the original peoples there as their own entirely,
Yeah.
without taking into account anybody else who lives there or has lived there in the past.
Well, yes, and we're having this discussion on stolen land in a place that has constantly attempted to rewrite history, because that's what settler colonies do. They use myths in the beginning and mythologies about, whether it's an empty land or a land for without a people, for for a people with people without a land. These sorts of myths first, and then as the truth comes out, and as there are capacities for oppressed people to actually speak truth to power, then it's starting to be a revision of history and a rewriting of history and a denial of history. And so this is the constant game that Zionists play. On the one hand, there are those who deny the Nakba; on the other, there are those who justify it. And those goalposts keep changing in the Zionist playbook, but we're very familiar with them. And Palestinians and their allies, the mobilization of support for Palestinians continues to grow globally. And again, this explains the hysterical reaction from the Zionist lobby, because we are winning the moral war. We are winning, the hearts and minds of people who can see plainly what is happening.
The other thing is that it should be made clear that Zionist ideology is not Judaism. And I've been struck by having met people of Zionist persuasion in Australia that it has this the system that they work with sort of infects people's personal and political power, the individual's power, because they require them to be completely loyal without question. And it's got a smack of Opus Dei or the Masons in a funny kind of way. Is that your reflection on this?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't, my expertise is not how sort of the Zionist lobby and the Zionist sort of, how they operate within themselves. My experience is how they operate against Palestinians. And for me, it's something that is problematic, not just in terms of the hardcore Zionists, but also liberal Zionists. And that's probably, always going to be the case when it comes to anti-racism efforts. There are those who are always going to be on the extreme end, and then there are those who profess to be progressive. And so you see this, for example, among a lot of Zionists who will talk about sovereignty for Indigenous people here, and get on board things like The Voice or Treaty or the Uluru Statement of the Heart, with absolutely no sense of, self-awareness about how ridiculous it is for a Zionist to be even using that language when they are defending a settler colony in Israel. So for me, those are the more problematic people, because unfortunately they seduce a lot of the left. For example, Maurice Schwartz, who is the publisher of Black Ink Books and the Saturday Paper, where supposedly progressive people publish and consume that news, thinking that it is progressive politics, and yet he is an anti-Palestinian. So there are many sort of there's a spectrum there when it comes to our work, and the kind of solidarities that we need to build, and for people to confront the fact that Zionism can come in all forms, and those on the left, the progressive liberal left, need to be called to account and held accountable for their double standards.
Yeah, because it's not just the two writers in Adelaide. It's also an SBS journalist who has been put under the pump because he's been for a tweet that he made 10 years ago, which just seems quite bizarre, has been suspended. And also in Wollongong, the university has decided on a definition of anti-Semitism without any consultation with even the academics who teach in that area.
Well, yes, well, and I come from Macquarie University, who also passed that, who accepted and adopted that definition, with, not that much publicity about it at all. I don't even think most academics know that the university did that. Melbourne University has also adopted it, and did so, refusing to meet with Palestinians who sought meetings. And so what we're seeing here, when I started, we're seeing in many spheres there which profess to be about freedom and freedom of speech and, the circulation of ideas and academic integrity, we are seeing this shutting down. And it's not just using it as a blunt instrument for example, what happened to the SBS journalist, Issam Al-Ghalib, who was suspended. It's not just used in that way. It also has a chilling effect. And I think that is the more insidious impact. And even with Adelaide Festival, Writers' Festival, the idea is, well, if we can't get every Palestinian, out of that festival, if we can't get every Palestinian to stop, speaking out, at least we can make enough noise that a next festival will think twice before inviting a Palestinian because of the controversy, because of what's going to happen. And that is the more insidious impact that we need to really fight against constantly.
It's just to finish off, it's the parallels with Australia and Palestine are very chilling because the Zionist experiment did actually talk about Terra Nullius in before they approached taking over that landmass, which seems quite bizarre in reflection.
Yeah, and that's the shared logic of settler colonies, that they need to create a mythology in order to justify the theft and the genocide and the ethnic cleansing. And so we had Terra Nullius here, and we had the Zionist mantra that Palestine was an empty land, or that they made the desert bloom, or that a land without a people for a people without a land, as if the Palestinians didn't exist. And these mythologies and lies have clearly been called out and exposed, but they still endure in some circles, and we just need to keep raising awareness about them and building our coalitions and solidarity campaigns.
Thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you so much for having me.